Hello, folks. With the first set of week three readings, we begin with Meyer and Smith, the practical tutor. Only chapter two is assigned, and you'll see it's a lot of dialogue between tutors and students. It gives you context for what the authors are trying to suggest is the solution to the problem they see with inexperienced writers. But this is important for our purposes because we are beginning the revision process, engaging in the peer review process. And you should be thinking yourself about how to approach substantively revising your own papers and what type of comments you should be giving to your peers on the peer reviews. So it should be pressing you to think about the type of critical questions you should be asking both of yourself and of your peers when reviewing written work. What I would like you to be taking away from this article is the distinction Meyer and Smith draw between experienced and inexperienced writers. You may well disagree with their characterization of inexperienced writers, but I want you to be able to articulate what that distinction is, perhaps as a preface to being able to explain why it is that you agree or disagree with their analysis. So in this vein, they have this kind of cumbersome concept of a dialogic habit of mind. I want you to explain what that means and what the significance of this skill is. And this is the central component of their argument. So hopefully you pay close attention to this concept. Hopefully it's relatively clear. I also want you to be able to explain why Meyer and Smith argue, what the solution is that Meyer and Smith argue helps students become more experienced writers in this regard with this particular problem that they're discussing. Your understanding of what the solution needs to be again, relative to the dialogue context between tutor and student that the chapter is presented in, your understanding here needs to be pretty specific. In this vein, I might ask a question on the quiz about how you perceive your strengths and weaknesses as a writer, focusing specifically on refining some of our weaknesses or correcting some of our weaknesses. So be prepared to explain what one of your weaknesses are and how you might try to improve that weakness in our own writing class. The Sommers piece on revision strategies piggybacks on this idea. Sommers has a different conception of what the particular difference between inexperienced and experienced writers are, which I want you to focus on, be able to explain. But the other two components I want you to focus on in this brief reading is this conception of a linear model of writing. This concept of a linear model, you need to be able to define, and it informs Sommers' conception of the mistake inexperienced writers make in defining or conceiving the writing and revision process. So you need to be able to explain why the linear model of writing is problematic, according to Sommers. And you also need to be able to explain how this conception of the linear model relates to her central claim that she defends. So be in a position to explain what that central claim is. Again, all of this is bearing on the idea of what the revision process requires and how experienced writers engage the revision process as opposed to inexperienced writers. Shifting gears to the substantive reading for the week, for this section, Caney's chapter three on civil and political justice, where he examines a number of rights-based arguments as one way of justifying his cosmopolitan account of justice. This chapter is building on chapter two and the idea that if we take global justice seriously, then we have to accept some conception of moral principles as universal in scope. So the chapter, as you're coming to see with Caney, is very dense. Lots of background information is assumed, lots of different arguments, in this case for and against rights-based accounts of justice, are presented throughout. He weaves his discussion around these existing theories, and I don't want you to get overwhelmed by the amount of material. What I would like you to focus on are four different things. The first, I want you to be able to explain what it means to have a right and what human rights are and how this conception of civil and political rights constitute examples of human rights. Second, I want you to focus on the particular rights-based account that Kaney defends. So he explores the first three and claims that they're all problematic, and he sets out to defend the fourth. And I want you to be thinking about his central claim and answering the handful of questions that I give. So his conception, this conception of the rights-based account, is taking seriously the idea of having an interest in well-being. It's an argument from the conception of what the relevance of well-being is with regard to rights. And so I want you to be able to explain what that concept is. I want you to be able to identify three reasons or pieces of evidence he uses to demonstrate the truth of his claim that this well-being-based argument, or this particular rights-based argument, can successfully defend the rights-based account of justice. I also want you to be thinking through what his warrant would be, as usual. Think about some fundamental idea, some fundamental value that Kaney could rest this entire argument, this rights-based account, on. Third, I want you to be able to explain two ways in which Rawls, his non-cosmopolitan defense of human rights, differs from Kaney's cosmopolitan defense. So both Rawls, who rejects the cosmopolitan account that Kaney is developing, both Rawls and Kaney and others accept this the relevance of a commitment to human rights, and so and this sort of account of justice based on human rights. But Rawls, again, is rejecting Kaney's approach. And so explain how these two approaches differ. And I give you a couple specific pages. The Rawls piece is assuming a lot of background knowledge. And so not only do you need to read that short section that Kaney gives on Rawls, but you need to get into some of the possible objections to Rawls's account, which you'll see on pages 81 through 85. So you're going to need those, at least those handful of pages, to get a grasp of what Rawls is arguing to be able to juxtapose the two. Lastly, I want you to be able to explain in detail one of the four challenges to the rights-based account of justice that Kaney discusses. This is the section that he ends his, or the sections that he ends his chapter on. And just pick one. I don't really care which one you find most plausible or the easiest to approach, the easiest to understand. But I want you to be able to explain one possible objection that Kaney engages to this rights-based account of justice.